Afghanistan. So this is total falsehood. But this seems to be a practice of the Bush administration, as it was a practice of the Trump administration, as it was a practice of the Bush administration.
We're going to have to leave it there, but we're going to do part two with you and post it online at democracynow.org. Lawrence Wilkerson, retired United States Army colonel who served as Secretary of State, Colin Powell's chief of staff. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. Stay tuned for more talk radio with Cecil and Celeste.
I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land.
I'm Shahid Hamid, KBOO board member. Join the World Arts Foundation and KBOO Radio as we pay homage to the late Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. It's the 35th anniversary of Keep Alive the Dream, Monday, January the 20th, from 11 to 6:30 p.m. at the Highland Christian Center. This year, we will be joined by international opera star Angela Brown and straight from America's Got Talent, Danielle Damon. That's Monday, January the 20th, from 11 to 6:30 p.m. at the Highland Christian Center at 7600 Northeast Gleason. Or listen live on KBOO Radio or view it on Open Signal Community Television.
Join us on Tuesday, January 21st for Hindsight 2020, debriefing the last 3 years. A day of special programming looking back at the Trump regime, what happened, why, and the repercussions domestically and internationally. We'll focus on national policy, foreign policy, privacy and surveillance, policing, immigration, labor rights, confronting white nationalism, the environment, and much more. Again, that's Hindsight 2020, debriefing the last 3 years on Tuesday, January 21st from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. here on your community radio, KBOO Portland.
Good morning. You are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO. Broadcasting from Portland at 90.7, in Hood River 91.9, and in Corvallis, Albany 104.3. via the World Wide Web, it is kboo.fm. Today is January 6th, 2020. I am Cecil Prescott, and I welcome you and for sharing some of your time here with us this morning. This morning, we want to explore the opportunity to do a little bit of self-reflection. Certainly appropriate at the beginning of the year, about ourselves, about how we respond to things in the world, and what does it mean to live what some people might say an honorable life. Certainly we are confronted by continued horrors in our world today, ranging from the results of climate change in the Southern Hemisphere in Australia, to the horrors of warfare in the Middle East, and continue troubling that continues throughout the world. But what does it mean to live a principled life? How do we live a principled life, and how do we confront the evils that surround all of us? We would like your thoughts on these things and your responses to how we live a what some people might say a consistently moral or ethical life. Let me give you our numbers. If you would give us a call, and we would welcome your calls, please give us a call at 503-231-8187. Again, that's 503-231-8187. Celeste and I thought about, you know, the beginning of this year and what, how we want to enter into it. And we thought we might begin our first program of this new year by addressing some of those issues about, you know, what is it actually mean to live morally? And are there times in which we skirt the edges of what we think is the proper thing to do? Let me give you two examples, one from popular culture and one from modern politics. A movie, I think it's 1992, character John Hull in the movie Deep Cover talks about money. And he says in this movie, "We took $11 million in drug profits out of the van. The money doesn't know where it comes from, but I do. If I keep it, I'm a criminal. If I give it to the government, I'm a fool. If I try and do some good with it, maybe it just makes things worse. Either way, I'll probably just wind up getting myself in more trouble. It is an impossible choice. But in a way, we all have to make it. What would you do?" Character from a movie, Deep Cover, I'm confronted with the existential question of what do we do? $11 million in drug profits. Do I give it to the government? Do I keep it? Whatever I do, I might make things worse. Hold on to that. Now here's something that happened in terms of modern politics and political campaigns. Part of the continuing roadshow of the Democratic candidates for president, they had, I don't know how often, monthly, bi-weekly debate, you know, whoever can, well, afford or to be participate or welcome. So last month, it was yet another debate among some of the candidates for the presidency on the Democratic side, and there came a moment where Senator Elizabeth Warren confronted Mayor Pete Buttigieg on terms of his fundraising, his recent fundraising practices. And she says, and I quote, she's talking about a closed-door fundraising he had in Silicon Valley. Senator Warren said, "So the mayor just recently had a fundraiser that was held in a wine cave full of crystals and served $900 a bottle of wine. Think about who comes to that," Warren said. "We made the decision many years ago that rich people in smoke-filled rooms would not pick the next president of the United States. Billionaires in wine caves should not pick the next president of the United States." Senator Warren about Mayor Pete fundraisings. In his response, Mayor Buttigieg said, "Well, according to Forbes magazine, I am the only person on this stage who's not a millionaire or a billionaire. This is a problem issuing purity tests you yourself cannot pass." He said, pointing out that Warren's net worth is 100 times mine. And he continues, if Senator went home and felt the holiday spirit and donated to my campaign. Would that pollute my campaign because it came from a wealthy person? No, I would be glad to have that support. Belichick responded. Again, an example of the ethical challenges we all face in our lives. What does it mean to be pure? What does it mean to live a totally ethical life? And are there times when we are less than honorable or pure or following our principles? And how do we make those decisions? Our nation's, once again, is on the brink of escalation of war. And before we began our broadcast, we heard a promo talking about the Martin Luther King annual celebration that KBOO will broadcast. And it occurred to me as I heard that promo that here we are yet again on the brink of the celebration of Martin Luther King's birthday, and yet again as a nation we are confronted with the challenge of what does it mean and will we ever hear Dr. King's prophetic words about the horrors of war and imperialism? Can we live an honorable life as individuals, as a community, as a nation, or as a world? What are those things that you do, and how do you make those decisions? We welcome your thoughts and your comments on these. Give us a call at 503-231-8187. Is that the right number? Thank you, Ty. I just started citing numbers and said, oh, am I giving someone else's number? So no, 503-231-8187. Give us a call. How do you make those ethical decisions? Are they possible? And so it might be very personal. It may be political. It may be how you make decisions in terms of your family. We are, as a civilization, as a world, we are confronted by the ethical decisions we have to make, and we refuse to make in terms of confronting the climate crisis we face. And then before I get on my, you know, hobby horse, I have to examine my own practices. There are times when I fail to live, do the walk that I should do. Whether it's on climate change, whether it is on how I use the monies I have, or whether or not it's how we confront as a nation the challenge to the horrors of war. How do you make those decisions? Well, let's hear what Camilo have to say. He has called us at 503-231-8187. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm well. Good morning. It occurs to me that your program, Coming After Amy's, always presents a kind of a challenge and in the framework of inspiration, because Amy's program is always very rich.
Yes.
And I think that what we learned, and Colonel Wilkinson commented on it, was that we had for the first time a really good analysis by that professor who spent a lot of time in Iran.
Yes.
And she laid out all of the complexities that our government tends to ignore.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the point that I want to make. And it's coming as a kind of a caution and advisory. And I think even in the question that you asked today, you're looking for a simple, straightforward concept of, well, you know, what is the solution? Is there a moral solution? There's never any kind of simple solution to which we can reduce all of the complexities. That's true in climate change, that's true in war, it's true in politics. And a very, very good book about this is Climate, A New Story by Charles Eisenstein. And he is examining the environmental climate change controversy crisis by examining the fact that, for the most part, environment has come down very narrowly on the issue of greenhouse gases, particularly carbon. But the problem with that is that it doesn't take into consideration the interrelationships, the systemic factors that are underlying this, and the same things that produce war, poverty, are the same things that have resulted in the environmental catastrophe. So I'm saying, with that warning, don't try to find some narrow, significant factor that is going to sort of claim a kind of voice for how you are going to move forward in 2020 to solve all of the problems, because it's never going to be like that.
No, but okay, if I agree, but how do we, knowing that there, it will never be like crystal clear, a clear path, how do we?
The first thing you have to do is to be patient. Patient enough to examine all of the factors that are involved in a circumstance, and not to be willing to let your own opinion take precedence and try to either influence others or at least limit the information that you're willing to consider in reviewing phenomena. And, you know, this is true in my faith in Buddhism, that concepts are really the key to the sign that you're deluded, and that you're not allowing yourself the opportunity to examine what you have it about yourself in order to move towards awakening. I mean, that's what the Buddha did. He looked around and saw what was going on and realized that, you know, we really don't understand ourselves. And that's the first step. And I think once you take that step, you'll begin to see things that you miss otherwise, like the beauty and the justice that already exists in the world and that needs to be preserved and protected. And there are simple things that we can do, like loving kindness, that really, you know, cannot be overemphasized how crucial they are.
Hey, thank you, Camilo.
Okay.
And for putting that perspective. And yeah, also with you, after listening to Amy this morning, I say, oh my goodness. Ah, yeah. And I wonder, there's a tendency, I think, for many of us is to panic, and not, as I think you suggested, in terms of slow down to listen to metaphorically take a breath.
I'm sitting back and listening and thinking, and a little concerned about how sometimes the idea of getting more information to make more...
I can't hear Celeste.
Yeah,
okay.
Okay.
Something's wrong with my mic. Hold on. Let me check it again. No, you can...
Okay.
Let me see if you can do it this way.
Try the other one. Okay, we're going to try the other mic.
Okay, set here. Okay, is this...
No.
No.
This no. Okay, use my mic.
No, that's... Here we go. Yeah. And then I'll run back at the next call and see if I can figure out what's going on. You know, one of the problems we have to accept when we talk about stepping back and trying to get out of our bubble is how complex the current state of the world is, and it is not so easy to have resources or to know resources or to know how to parse out information, separate propaganda from peace-giving truth. And sometimes I think we forget that in many ways we're talking about first world privilege when it comes to information and being able to step back. And sometimes we forget about the fact that even though this is called the richest country on the planet, there are pockets where we have people going through what's not unlike third world conditions. And they don't have the opportunities, the time, the presence of mind, the resources to bring to bear, to be able to get that moment to catch a breath, because it's run from one situation or one job to another situation or job. And where do they get that privilege to stop and rest? Just because this is America does not mean that everybody gets to operate at a level that allows that level of introspection. And so I don't want to be smug in my saying, yeah, we need to stand back and catch our breath. I want us to remember that the world has made that hard nowadays, and even purposely so, you know, even purposely so. The way you keep people serfs is to keep them uneducated, but also so busy with the survival mechanism of life or the trivial aspects of life that you don't have time for that deep introspection. Having leisure is a luxury.
Well, and I mean, there's no question that that's true, but you can't let that stop you from using your mind.
I'm not saying we should stop. I'm just saying let's figure out a way to share the time with each other so that we can get time.
That's why we're on this program. That's what this is all about.
Well, it's one of the aspects, because I keep thinking about people who don't even have time to listen to us. I want to thank you for your call.
Take the time. Take the time.
Folks who don't have the time, tell us, how do you make the time? But thank you for the call and for the reminder.
Okay.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the city, 91.9 in the gorge, and 104.3 in the valley. And let me go disappear again and figure out what's wrong with the headphones.
Okay, well, let's go to our next caller. I'm not sure we caught your name. Oh, and you hung up. But yet, we hold on, because we can go to, I believe, Sean is on the line. Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Yes.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. How are you today?
I'm hanging in there. How are you this morning?
I'm fine. Well.
Doing well.
I was remembering a story about Henry David Thoreau. So I guess the Mexican-American War had broken out.
Yes.
And Ralph Waldo Emerson had heard that Thoreau was in prison. So he went to visit Thoreau, and he saw him behind the bars, and he said, what are you doing in there? And Thoreau quickly responded back, what are you doing out there?
Mm-hmm.
Basically saying, you know, like, this is such a obvious cut and dry thing. Like, it's not complicated at all. the last thing it is complicated. It couldn't be more clear and transparently obvious. As far as I'm concerned, there's a lot of, like, willful ignorance. There's a lot of opportunistic cynicism.
Mm.
You know, the German people after World War II, you know, were interrogated. You know, how could you possibly allow this monster Hitler to come into power and allow the Holocaust to happen?
Mm.
And a lot of them had responses like, you know, hey, I was just going about my normal life. I was trying to feed my family. You know, the work ethic in this country was insane. You know, we had to, you know, it was all about providing for our families and all that political stuff that was going on. How are we supposed to pay any attention to that? So there's a lot of, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, I guess part of it is what happens when you take a population, you take a workforce, and they go from being a self-respecting, organized proletariat – into a bedraggled lumpen proletariat where we're all running around, we have no time, you know, our families are disintegrating, everything is just stressful and precarious. And you're right, we go from a self-respecting proletariat, organized, able to defend our interests, into this kind of sad collection of wage slaves, you know. So I want to push back on Camilla that it's complicated. Like my personal sacrifice has been nothing compared to people that are rotting behind bars right now, that have died in the struggle. So I want to be perfectly clear, like my personal sacrifice has been nothing compared to them,
right.
But I will say in my own defense, financially, personally, emotionally, the last 30 years have left me clinging to life. I mean, you know, personally speaking, my life is destroyed, you know, but so I guess what I'm saying is this is not complicated, though. You know, it's perfectly obvious what we should be doing. You know, like the Catholic worker people, the plowshares movement, you know, those people stop paying their taxes, they get sent to prison, they symbolically do damage on military bases. It's their way of opting out. It's their way of saying, we will not participate. We will not have anything to do with this capitalist, imperialist, ecocidal reality. And you know, I haven't taken that step yet myself personally, but I have nothing but respect for the people that have done that. And I just hate to hear the kind of professional, managerial class, New Age stuff, you know, about, oh, this is so complicated. This is, you know. No, the last thing it is complicated. It's perfectly transparently obvious.
So why? Obvious, why haven't you taken the step? That's maybe a question for many of us. It seems obvious, so, but why are we unable to take that step?
So I was 19 in 1991 when Desert Storm broke out, and I was under the delusion that we were going to have a rebirth of the 1960s anti-Vietnam War movement, the counterculture, that there was going to be a mass movement rising up against the Gulf War, against the SNL bailout, against the class war that was allowing our, you know, mass incarceration, so on and so forth. I was thinking back in 1990, 1991, we were going to have this mass movement uprising.
Right.
And it didn't happen, obviously. And I, you know, that was personally devastating for me. And, you know, I've been in counseling, you know, mental health counseling for years and years, you know, hospitalization, so on and so forth. So I keep hanging in there hoping that we're going to have this mass movement. Will it require me to actually, like, you know, find out how to get in touch with the plowshares and actually get myself sent to prison? I mean,
maybe
that's where I'm headed.
Stop for a minute. Think about this. Okay. Why did the fact that there was not a mass uprising have such a profound effect on you? And how is it that you've decided even now that you're still contemplating taking whatever step it is?
Well, so when I say financially destroyed, I mean, I've placed my financial priorities towards helping leftist causes over my personal survival, my personal, you know, comforts.
All right.
So being financially devastated, you know, so I want to give myself a little bit of credit. On the one hand, my sacrifice is nothing compared to what so many other people have sacrificed. But in my own defense, I could be living a completely different life if I hadn't had the commitments I have to anti-capitalism, anti-imperialism, and, you know, the environment. So, like, so to a certain extent, I mean, I've made some sacrifices. I haven't taken that final step. And besides, I don't want to be like, you know, the whole like individualistic, you know, hero savior thing. I realize that's counter-revolutionary. That's got nothing to do with building a movement. But it just seems like the New Age movement, identity politics, you know, you could go on and on and on with why we haven't seen a real mass movement form in the United States. And that's a completely different conversation. But, you know, I'll just stop there and let other folks call in if that's okay.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. Yeah, thank you for your call, and thank you for wrestling with this, both personally and in terms of how you live your life. Our numbers are 503-231-8187.
Y'all, you see my purse lips.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm one of the things I'm got a lot of thoughts rolling around in my head, and one of the things I'm trying to do is, you know, make sure I pay respect to the way people act out their beliefs, and not get caught up in our current situation of pointing fingers and blame. But my question for a lot of us is, how do we know how much of our chips to put into a situation? Mm-hmm. You know, the first, and maybe it's because I'm a mother and a grandparent and mm-hmm. and have been a foster parent, et cetera, et cetera, you know, that I think in these terms. But I always think of, well, I'm going to put my oxygen mask on first, mm-hmm. you know, so that I am settled. I don't have to be wholly taken care of or wholly stabilized in my situation. And as a matter of fact, as you know, I haven't been. Right. I've gone through my own share of suffering slings and arrows. But I always remember the advice, you know, from parents and whatever. It says, you know, essentially put your own oxygen mask on, and then couple that would be the change you want to see. Right. And maybe a mass uprising is not possible the way society is structured now. I don't know. I think that was a good point that our caller brought up, is that we should think in terms of sacrifice. You know, we should think in terms of meeting other people's needs before we worry about our wants. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we got to remember that those who fight and run away live to fight another day, yeah. You know, and that's, you know, when I get tired sometimes or I think about some radical action I might have taken, I remember people like Harriet Tubman, who had to endure so many different intersectionalities of identity and had to be strategic in responses to live long enough to have the Underground Railroad to set people free, you know.
So I think what I'm hearing from you, in part of one, to acknowledge the knowledge that we can do what we can where we can. And I think that's somewhat similar to where I think Sean was getting to, even though he was criticizing the lack of a mass movement, I heard. But I thought I heard he was saying, you know, at the end, you know, I'm doing a bit. I'm doing something that I can do. And, I haven't totally stopped paying my taxes or put myself, you know, in prison, but I'm on my path. And so, you know,
that is significant. That matters.
It matters. Yeah. And even though I heard him, you know, I thought I heard him saying, you know, poo-pooing those who, mm-hmm. you know, more, who, you know, mm-hmm. That the little bit matters, and that we can make change where we are.
Right.
And the fact that there isn't a mass movement, well, the mass movement begins smaller. I mean, it doesn't, like, one day.
One step, one person.
Yeah.
You know? And so I guess what it is I hear both I understand that I'm doing good as well as I'm not doing enough.
Yes.
And I also hear, why wasn't more people involved in it? Because I did it, you know?
Yes.
And it's like, okay, there's a balance between that, and that's being satisfied again with what you did and working with what you have.
What you have. And I think we need to recognize that we're all on our paths. And I, was it Sean or Camilo who mentioned the necessity to appreciate, mm-hmm. Where we all are, and not to assume that I know it all or that the path I've chosen is the best path. Having said that, is that a cop-out sometimes by avoiding making difficult decisions in terms of how we live our lives. How do you choose the honorable, the ethical things to do? And are there moments when you, you have to live, so are you willing to take that contribution from a corporation because it can do some good? Give us your thoughts on how you manage to walk that balance. 503-231-8187.
You know, walking that balance sometimes is hard too, because and one of the things we talked about last night was dealing with this myth of pure money. Mm-hmm. You know, in terms of our world or global, however you want to define it, economics, things are so intertwined nowadays. Right. You don't know who or what you're supporting, or you don't know if the things that you are trying to do to live an ethical life are indeed, quote unquote, pure and untainted. A good example is how many people are frustrated finding out that some of their favorite food stores have either been bought by mega corporations, yeah, or on a more personal level, maybe they've been selling what was called an organic item, and it turns out, well, what's organic? Yes. You know, or you think you're dealing with something that's a fair trade, equitable import company that's helping people overseas achieve economic, you know, independence, only to find out, well, yeah, they may be achieving economic independence, but, you know, some of that money is also going to do something else that you disagree with, you know?
it's interesting you raised that, because I came across this article, and it's sort of like, just destroyed my world this weekend. Not destroyed my world, but it was sort of like, oh my goodness. It was about fair trade.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I read it and I said, oh gosh.
So it's not really fair trade. And so, you know, one of the questions is, you know, how do you deal with that? I mean, you know, some organizations don't want to take money from certain other entities because it's tainted money, even though people who may be giving you donations might be working in that sweatshop and sending you that money. Yeah. So you're still getting it, you know. But anyway, 503-231-8187. We'll go to our next caller. Bill, thanks for holding.
Thank you. I tuned out and tuned back in, so if I'm kind of lost, just let me know. But talking about how we make moral decisions in a world where every decision is almost political now. So if I make a choice to protect the environment, I'm against business. And this notion is like, how do we get around that thing where in the current environment, when you are almost told that if you support this, then you can't possibly support something on the opposite side. Mm-hmm. And until mm-hmm. we arrive at a point where, like, I realize in a connected world, the environment might not be my biggest concern, but connecting to other outlets where maybe I can begin to learn. And in a politicized world, I think it's easy to stop learning and stop seeing that mm. while I'm an American citizen, immigration is still important to me with respect to fairness and treatment of people. So I think that we can talk about, you know, how we change systems, but this notion that if I subscribe to immigration that somehow I'm against American jobs or I'm against these, it is just crazy to me to think that we are at this point when we forget that learning is the most important thing to correcting what may be socially normal today. Slavery was once acceptable, and people had a debate about that. So I think that we have to continue to educate ourselves and stop allowing it to be politicized in such a way that we are willing to remain ignorant.
So how do I appreciate what you said in terms of the necessity to be open to continue learning, and not, and to be able to, I, what I suspect is to be in dialogue with other those on the other
Correct.
Side, and not make things always so you know, my side or the highway.
Yeah, so black and white or oppositional.
I was reading an article yesterday. It was talking about a debate that's going on in Methodist Church. There'll probably be a division in that church over LGBTQ issues.
Uh-oh. Call, Bill, you still there? Hello?
Are you still Bill? There, Bill? Oh,
okay. We lost him. Well, continue to make
Yeah, I was going to ask him because how do we make those, you know, he used the example of slavery and the need to be in conversation. But how do you acknowledge the worthiness of personhood of the person on the opposite side of an issue, which you think they are totally morally wrong? So, you know, it's one, you know, are there some issues you can say that, I maybe respect you as an individual, but you are totally wrong. There is no compromise. It's either you, what are those points where you have to say, if you believe in slavery, that's it. We can't be in dialogue.
That's a deal breaker.
And in the article I was reading up about United Methodist Church and about this plan now to break up and recognize that we are both fellow pilgrims on the journey towards truth. And person said, you know, I'm a queer person, and I do not. The fact that we're going to give you money to walk away because you think I'm going to hell is I just don't agree with that. I mean, there are some issues that we can't compromise on.
I don't think it bothers me so much that somebody might think that I'm going to hell because of my behaviors or personal beliefs, because, you know, they're not actually putting me in hell unless, and here comes the deal breaker, they are treating me differently. They're not giving me access, or they're blocking access or questioning access to what I need to survive in a measure of stability. Well, I won't call it comfort, but I will say stability. So can I get a job? Can I live in decent housing? Can I use mass transit? Can I get to the bank without you giving me grief? You know, do you stop me from buying clothes? Do you tag around and you keep me from going to see my doctor? You know, what are you doing to interfere with my life? Because their thoughts, their statements about me, I have to withstand.
Okay.
And I have a certain amount of thickness being both female and a woman of color.
And thank you for making that clarification.
Uh-huh.
So the fact is that they are, it's not just their thoughts, it's their actions that have consequences.
Yeah.
And so the person is saying, well, I can't get a job in your organization because of what I think or what
you know,
believe.
And I won't work with you, okay, but don't stop me from getting a job somewhere else.
And people are saying, well, if you have that power to keep me from being all I can be, what does that mean?
For me, as a person of color who's gone through some of the nonsense that comes from not being hired or being discriminated against, you know, I think, okay, I'm going to be like water, you know? I'm just going to flow somewhere else, because we deal with these kind of slights every day, sometimes multiple times a day, and you cannot let them overwhelm you. But by the same token, it's like, I do want them to know I'm pointing out to other folks, hey, this is my experience with this group. You might want to think about being involved with them. I'm not going to tell you what to do, you know, but this is what they're doing to people who are like us, and let's just choose to go elsewhere.
So my grandmother had a sister-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
They both grew up in the South. Both confronted the legacy and the horrors of segregation. They had two different responses to it. One, my grandmother left. Her sister-in-law remained. And I often tell the story that I remember this was in the 60s after the Equal Access law was passed.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandmother said, well, we're going to test this. So we're going to go and see whether we will be served in this establishment. And her sister-in-law said, no, we can't. I don't want anything to do with it. Let's just go to the colored store where we'll be served. Now, was one person's response proper and the other person's response wrong? My grandmother would say her sister-in-law response was wrong because it kept black folks back. By agreeing to segregation, you deny the full humanity of black people.
Mm-hmm.
Her sister-in-law said, well, you know, we got to eat somewhere.
Yeah. And I don't want to be stressed out. You know what? I'll say this. It depends on your strength and your locus of awareness for that moment. Because there are moments when I have tested the waters too and pushed back and was willing and able to deal with the consequences. And there's days when I said, I'm going to take the easy road because I was tired. Let's hear what Gabriel says. Thank you for holding.
Yeah, thanks for having me on this morning. Hey, I don't know if I certainly don't have an answer to the question if there is one. But I was just talking about this question with my best friend yesterday, kind of in regards to personal family relationships and how do we know when we cut somebody out or off and when we don't, and how do we justify that by our faith? And, you know, kind of what we came down to is, you know, I was thinking about all these old ladies in my life when I was young who used to tell me, you know, sometimes you just got to pray for them. And it used to just bother me. Pray for them? No, we got to teach them. We got to teach them that they're screwed up, you know. But the older I'm getting, the more I'm finding wisdom in that, because I think that a lot of times it doesn't come down to even like how big the moral imperative is. It comes down to how do you find yourself best being able to love people and love yourself at the same time. And so you're saying, it's like this individual moment by moment discernment of you know, can I love my brother if the only thing that he talks about, or how do I love my brother if the only thing he talks about is all of the illegals coming in and taking our jobs?
Oh, yeah.
Is that the only conversation that he can have? How do I best love him and my children who grow up in a very diverse neighborhood and have friends whose parents don't have documentation? And so I think that's what it comes down to. And then we have to recognize that each individual has different gifts and different abilities. And so, you know, how I may best love my brother is going to be different than how my sister best loves my brother. And we have to have a little faith in each other that just because those decisions, like you were saying, Cecil, your aunt and your mom having those two different reactions, like, you got to have faith in each other that, hey, just because it's different than my reaction doesn't mean that that's wrong. And so I think that's what I had to offer. And then the other thing is just to, it can become a slippery slope, and so we have to keep each other accountable and hold each other up when we start slipping. Because, you know, I look at my own church, the Catholic Church, and you know, this idea of who's out of communion and who's in communion.
Mm-hmm.
And it can go from, you know, well, clearly this person is out of communion because they're really advocating atrocious things, to, you know, we're going to withhold communion because somebody got a divorce or someone doesn't count the political line. And so it can be a slippery slope, and we got to hold each other up when we start slipping.
Gabe, it's good to know that you're becoming an old lady.
hey, you know what? I've been an old lady since I was 3 years old.
Hey, I heard that. Thank you so much for your call.
Thank you guys for having me on. Have a good morning.
You know, as we hold each other accountable, though, one of the things that has to happen is we have to be in continuous dialogue, because we have to create a common language so we can hold each other accountable and know that we're working with the same metric. And that's the other thing that we add to what Gabriel's saying, which means even if we cut somebody off, we're still talking to them.
Right.
Even if we just pray for them, we're still talking to them, because prayer is not necessarily about changing them. Sometimes it's really about us opening ourselves up to be changed.
Right.
Anyway, let's go to our next caller. Robbie, thanks for holding.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I just wanted to, you probably have heard me mention this before. I always tell people who have religious family members who are Trump supporters or the likes to use their, and I don't know, what I do is I call myself a Christian anarchist, first of all, which it's ironic because it makes Christians and anarchists mad at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Not if they really understood both of their own belief systems, they shouldn't.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, you know, and I can understand that a lot of people get turned off by hearing, you know, religious or Christianity. But mm-hmm. the tool that I found very useful for dealing with Trump supporters or the Republicans who, you know, say that there's illegals or, you know, they have problems with gay people or, you know, those people, I find we need to use their tools of communication. We need to read the Bible so we can talk with them. And this is what I do with Joey Gibson. And he literally runs away from me because he doesn't like being confronted with mm-hmm. what the Bible actually says. Mm-hmm. You know, for instance, there's a lot of people who just, you know, they hear people preach the Bible and they don't actually read it for themselves. So I don't think everybody on the Republican side is necessarily a bad person. I think that there's just a few people like Joey Gibson who get up there and interpret the Bible to mean they're, you know, basically the exact opposite of what the Bible is. And then, you know, they share that with people. So what I find, and I did get one person to stop showing up to the Patriot Prayer thing, because I explained to him the concept of he without sin cast the first stone.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially that what that verse, what that teaching from Jesus, when he said he without sin cast the first stone, is we can't judge people. And so it's in one time I was in one of the protests downtown where, you know, we confronted the Patriot Prayer, and I went right into the middle of the storm and I started handing out. I was like, excuse me, sir, have you accepted Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior? And all these people, well, yes, I do. And then I handed out this flyer and it said, you know, like, you know, when a foreigner resides among you in your land, you're supposed to treat them with respect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the verses that go right against what they're suggesting. And so what I find, though, is that that's the most useful tool that we can do, is that we embrace their ideologies and then point out their hypocrisies. And then the thing is they can't, you know, what are they going to do? They're going to run away. But, like, you know, then, as you said earlier, you know, we got to pray for them and let the, you know, if we can at least educate them a little bit and then bring them and embrace them in a little bit, you know, like have that conversation with them, point out why we think they're wrong. And then leave it on that open thing. Like, there was one individual who when I told him this, he didn't understand the concept of he without sin cast the first stone.
Mm-hmm.
And he has not come back to the Patriot Prayer rallies. Mm-hmm. And it was like this like mind blowing moment for him, where he like looked at me and his jaw dropped and he was like, wait, so you're saying the stone is judgment? And I was like, yes.
Well, the stone, remember, we are supposed to judge, but only certain things and with what right judgment. That's where human beings trip up. It's like, well, what is right judgment? You know, exactly. But that's a whole nother conversation where we got a little more time.
If I could finish really quick, you did mention it earlier. You did say it's the actions that following it, right?
So you go.
And so it's like, even if I, let's just say, you know, I see somebody who looks like I might get mugged down an alleyway, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's that judgment, that initial judgment could keep me safe, but it's how I act on it, right? It's like if that person comes up to me and is like, hey, can I get a lighter? You know, how can I treat them? That's going forward. That's the action.
Yes.
So that's the one differentiating thing. But I'll take the answers off here. Thank you so much for having
me. Well, thanks for making that distinction, because actually you made the point yourself. That's exactly what I was going to say. So thank you for your call, Robbie.
Thank you.
You know, I remember I was a freshman in college working in some philosophy class I had, and you know, it's when we really started digging into some of the concepts you learned earlier, and hoist by their own petard was one of them that hit me. And it's, you know, and it doesn't even have to be an aggressive sense like that, in which, you know, you're literally blown up by your own rhetoric or your own devices.
Right.
But, you know, at least illuminated by your own devices. And it's just showing people, okay, if this is what you're thinking and this is what you're basing this argument on, do you actually... are you actually looking at the wholeness of it, and or are you cherry picking and not even going into talking about you're so wrong because of this, but it's like, well, here's the richness of what you're saying, and how does what you're saying right here reflect what you're basing it on? Is it consistent? But that goes back to what you were talking about in the very beginning of the show, being consistent.
And I think part of it, what you and Robbie are saying is to leave the leave space for people to change. I mean, it's one thing to keep beating someone literally or figuratively on the head. You're wrong. And just naturally we become defensive.
Yeah.
But if we leave the possibility and as he suggested to that person who stop coming to the Patriot prayer rally, possibly there was an openness that he saw. You know, I can change, but we have to leave it open and, you know, give him some space, some
give him some time to change, because even when bodybuilders work out for big muscles, they tear them down, but they rest them to let them rebuild. We got time for one last call. It looks like it's going to be Brian.
Hey.
Good morning.
Good morning. I just ended on the last call, and I'm thinking maybe I'll change what I was going to talk about, because I was feeling kind of down. You know, sometimes these conversations, you hear the statements of like, well, you know, about what had the Nazis, what happened in World War II, Germany, and you talk about slavery in our country, and all growing up, those kind of statements were like, oh, yeah, but that can't happen again. And I think that leads us into feeling like, well, yeah, I got a busy life, and I don't have time for some of these activities. I'd like to be. And part of you is thinking, oh, because there are certain things that are just fundamental. We're not going to go back there. But lately, you know, with certain things in the news, I'm like, well, you know, that isn't in stone anymore. You know, like sometimes lately I've been thinking about the whole slavery issue. You know, you kind of look back, and the Civil War and the end of slavery kind of coincided a bit with the upsurge of fossil fuels. And sometimes I think, you know, if that went away, people might start thinking, well, you know, slavery had a point. You know, got a lot of work done. And
well, wait a minute. It's not gone. Just be in prison and tell me that ain't slavery.
So it's like, there's, you know, when we think about making the decision about whether we should be active or not, it's like, don't base that on thinking that there are things set in stone. When you see the rhetoric that's out there now, it's like, wow. I mean, wow, a few years ago, it seems to me we wouldn't have even considered that. And now it's like today I heard the news about Trump threatening to bomb culturally significant things in Iran. And and people are saying, well, I think that that's, you know, goes against international law. It's like,
think? No, we're supposed to know.
Just, you know, if you're thinking about being active or not, and you're basing inactivity on, well, that far, it's like, don't take anything for granted.
That's right. Never take it for granted, because the price of freedom is vigilance.
Yes, exactly.
There you go.
Well, thank you very much for the discussion. Lots to chew on.
Thank you so much. And thanks, callers. You know, we try to live a pure life nowadays, you know, but it's getting harder because things are becoming complicated and intertwined. The trick, though, however, is, like we talked about earlier, stay in a bit of constant dialogue, not only with yourself and your values, but with your neighbors and families and friends, so that we have a common language, a common metric, a common value, and then we can value all of us in common. This is your Community Connection, KBOO Portland.
KBOO at the Clinton is a monthly film series that benefits your community radio station. This month we'll screen the documentary Time to Choose on Thursday, January 9th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater.
Coal contributes to 4 out of the 5 leading causes of death in the United States.
There was actually 6 neighbors who had brain tumors in about a 10-house span.
Again, that's the documentary Time to Choose on Thursday, January 9th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. For more information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Portland's Folk Festival on Friday, January 10th and Saturday, January 11th, 6 to midnight at the Crystal Ballroom in Portland. Portland's Folk Festival is an all-ages celebration of folk and Americana music in Portland. Friday performers include Anna Tivol, Cedar Teeth, Glitter Fox, and more. Saturday performers include Horse Feathers, The Get Ahead, and more. Again, that's Portland's Folk Festival, Friday, January 10th, and Saturday, January 11th, from 6 to midnight at the Crystal Ballroom, 1332 West Burnside Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
When we meet, there won't be winter.
Wish I was a mole in the ground. Wish I was a mole in the ground. 'Cause if I was a mole in the ground, I'd tear those mountains down.
You are listening to the Old Mole Variety Hour on KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM in the Portland metro area, KBOO.FM on the web. I'm Joe Clement, your host today. The Old Mole is a political magazine